Welcome to Audio Gyan with Kedar Nimkar, a podcast that documents insightful conversations with Indian designers, artists, musicians, writers, thinkers, and creatives of all types. Catch us on iTunes or visit audiogyan.com for more Gyan sessions. Here's your host, Kedar Nimkar.
Today, I have Deep Jyoti Saha with us on Audio Gyan. For those who follow him on Instagram, knows his style and work and recently gone viral series Corona. But I'm not going to introduce him by that. Deep Jyoti is an animator, illustrator, and he draws comics. His work is heavily influenced by his interactions with cities he has lived in, and it's clear that his observations of such detail reflects in his animated and illustrated stories. What got me interested in knowing his thoughts and works is basically his not so heavy on production type videos, but which are very deep rooted in his thought. So, well, let's explore that with him today. Thanks, Deep, for giving your time, and it's a real, real pleasure to have you on Audio Gyan.
Hey, thanks, Kedar, for having me.
So, as I said, I wanted to just capture the overall thought process and your animation background and your illustrations. And obviously, we'll end with some sort of touching upon the socio-political sort of inclination you express through your work. But the main conversation will be around illustration and animation.
Right.
So if you can start by telling us, like, what's your definition of storytelling? And I know you're very young, so I wouldn't say that how has it changed over time. But in general, what has been your understanding, or like, how do you define storytelling in general?
Right. So basically, growing up, our environment is very intrinsic to our overall development and overall outlook and the way we perceive things, basically. I grew up in a very middle-class family, like a bustling family in Kolkata. And I was an introvert growing up. And basically, the main advantage of being an introvert in a bustling family of close relatives, is basically the intake of information is huge. I mean, whenever I could remember when we used to stay as a, like, under one roof, like everybody, grandmother, grandfather, father, mother, brother, everyone was together. Aunts, children, everybody was like under the same roof, and we would be sticking around all day, all night, like having fun, quarreling, enjoying happy, sad times, everything together. So there was a lot of stories and a lot of gossip that was going on, what happened to the person, like on the street, what happened to the rickshawala that used to take me to school every day. So little things like that. I mean, like growing up, I would hear all the time without having to exert a lot of energy myself. I mean, I wouldn't have to tell them about my experiences or my stories a lot. I would just lend a ear to whatever has been happening. I would catch on to the drift, basically. So growing up, there was a lot of stories and a lot of different kinds of information, visually and otherwise also, that I was exposed to. And that kind of led to the development of something new, but telling, like, storytelling as a thing, I didn't really think upon it until it was like way later. Like, I picked up, basically, I've been drawing since like forever. I've been drawing since very early. I wasn't a great artist or something. I was a really mediocre one, but I would draw at a very early stage, and I picked it up from my father, who was basically for whom painting was a big hobby. So I picked it up from him, and I used to basically draw a lot, and but I never used to take it very seriously until, like, after the boards, a friend of mine desperately came to me, because we both had very exceptionally mediocre results after the board results. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine basically came to me and told me that there's this new course in St. Xavier's College that has animation in it. Do you want to try out? I was a little skeptical, but I thought that was the time I think I should I took the leap towards animation and thought of it as a something of a serious business than just a hobby. Before that, I mean, I didn't have much of a career goal as per se. I was like, I'll find a shelter for 3-4 years. I'll find a good college that my parents are happy with. And then I'll figure, I'll do some biochemistry honors. I'll follow my brother's footsteps. I'll be happy in life. But right now, when I'm looking back, I think that decision that I took is quite good. So right after Xavier's happened, I fell in love with animation. And the moment I fell in love with animation, I wanted more of it. And so we kind of, like I tried for NID again, and NID worked out, hopefully. And then like another 3 years of amazing time. So storytelling kind of evolved through. So I met people there, had more experiences there, and throughout this 25 years, I've been like having different kinds of experiences, and I've been different at different points in time. But I think polishing, like slowly but steadily, my storytelling is getting polished, and there are certain likes and dislikes that I try to cater to in my work, and that keeps on polishing as we go.
Hmm. Correct. But if I have to just slightly deep dive into one aspect, which is you said you started with sketching and like painting and drawing.
Yeah.
And then you moved to like moving images, which is sort of animation, if I call it. So both of them are used for storytelling in say like just illustration, maybe just comic strips. You have sort of a storyboard while here it's moving. So is there any nuanced observation which you have or which you had in while dealing with both these at the beginning and now? Like if there are any pros and cons of moving images versus like a static? I mean, I mean, it's a very cliche question ki yaar ye powerful hai ki wo powerful hai. Obviously, everything is powerful the way you use
it. Right.
But any insights there?
I feel that like, there is no comparison. I mean, like when you watch a film or when you watch a like a look at a photograph, you wouldn't think of how would it be like would it be better in film? Or like when you see a photograph, you wouldn't be like how would it be? Would it be better in film? Would it not be better? You don't think like that. Or when you're reading a book, when you see the adaptation of it in a film or whatever, you're not quite happy with it. The reason why it is so is because I think the medium is very intrinsic to the telling of a story. So, I mean, if you want to tell in a very cross medium way, it is very difficult because the language of a medium is very intrinsic to itself. I mean, you wouldn't have the same language. It is very difficult to get the exact same language of a poem in terms of an animated film. It's just an adaptation, but it doesn't get exactly the right emotion. So then the fight becomes how close you get to the real thing.
Correct.
So I mean, in terms of original thought and original storytelling, I feel the medium is very intrinsic. I mean, if Raghu Rai takes a picture, I wouldn't be able to basically replicate that in any form, be it music or animation or whatever. Or if A.R. Rahman makes a music piece, that can't be replicated in any other visual medium. It's very difficult to do that. So I feel that each has its own pros and cons. Static moving images, I mean, absolutely the magic of images moving, creating movement is very, very enticing and very exciting. And this is one of the fundamental reasons why I love animation. But I mean, illustration has the same impact, same but very different impact on people. And it is just the most important factor is storytelling. Again, the most important factor is what you want to say through whatever you do. So then you find the best derived medium to express it.
Correct, correct. Interesting. So what I've seen, at least, I mean, I understand it's just been like few years that you have been practicing and trying to evolve a craft, but I've seen like really good sort of stop motion animation. There's flat animation. There's like there are different styles. Right. So is it that you're consciously not making an effort to arrive at a particular style, or what is the thought process? Are you still exploring?
Right. As into like I'm started off like it's just been a couple of years. I mean, like mostly I've spent in animation education. It's just been a couple of years since I've been actually delving into projects and doing something of my own and trying to find out my voice. So in terms of that, I guess I'm still exploring in terms of, and I love exploring. I would love, if given an opportunity, I'd love to do that like till I keep doing animation. I want to do animation for the rest of my life. So yeah, mm-hmm. So in terms of, I would love to keep exploring if given the chance. The other thing is I slowly earlier I used to get this a lot that you need to develop a distinct style. I think there's a certain pressure among all artists, I mean not just animators, all artists to develop this certain kind of style visually that like almost immediately once you start getting into like your work, which is not quite possible, frankly. It is impossible to develop a style almost immediately. If you are, then either you are a prodigy kid or you are basically like delving into not so, like the style is not very prudent or very strong, I would say. That can change in a few years, which is completely fine again. I mean, if you change your style whenever you want to change it. But I guess I make the conscious decision of not having a style for exactly one fundamental reason, is that narrative of every story, the narrative kind of like basically guides everything else. I mean, narrative drives style. So I mean, that is quite intrinsic to, and very important for me, that every story is different and the way you tell a story has to be different from the way you told another story, perhaps, which is not quite the same. I mean, if you want to tell a story of two different people, you wouldn't want to tell it the exact same way. That's kind of like generalizing and not being honest to the work. So in terms of exploration of style, I mean, for animation especially, the visual language is the first thing that you see in a film or in a work of animation. So I think that is what hits the audience or audience minds, and that is what stays. So the more honest you are to the work, the style will develop itself accordingly. I would definitely say that I don't worry about having a style ever at all, because I mean, I would love to keep exploring, because that's what's important for an artist to grow. And secondly, this is like this has this story narrative basically kind of drives everything else.
Mm-hmm. No, but if you look at the pure styling of the story, actual story, right. So your last couple of Corona wale jo videos hai,
right.
They have a style, and I'm right. assuming that this is just because. So whatever research I've done, at least I'm assuming it is because of your bandwidth or the time you can devote to this, given your job and other stuff. So right. this rudimentary just collage and like motion and right. probably stock audio sort of images, right. Sort of progression helps you just build the story. But if you look at now, say Corona ka typography and then Sonder ka typography, it's right. almost the same. So why is it so?
So the thing is, Sonder, and I mean, then we'll have to delve into a little bit of graphic design and typography, which none of which I'm like a master or like even a student of. I don't even have like the basic understanding of graphic design. I mean, it's just the word that like the typography that emotes emotion, again. Mm-hmm. So what you see on screen kind of leaves you with a horrific, like a horrific sight, basically. So that's mm-hmm. that's one small attempt at me trying to get the typography right, I guess. Mm-hmm. In terms of Sonder also, it was something like that. It was that man's dream that becomes somewhat of a nightmare later on. And then he kind of accepts his fate, and his life goes on. So mm-hmm. so that was one thought behind it. But then again, if we look into the details, I guess I'm not a very, very, very like frame by frame detailed person. I mean, I like to keep certain mistakes in my work. Yeah, I mean, earlier I wasn't like this. Like a couple of years ago, I wasn't like this. I would always try to strive for like realism and getting every frame perfect, and every frame has to be drawn, everything. Right now, I guess I'm becoming quite more impatient to see the final result, I guess. But at the same time, enjoying the process of it. My main aim with these Corona animations was basically, just how can I turn this around in like 4 or 5 days? Because there's so much of news happening, and there's so much to take in. I just want to talk about this small issue. So how do I take this out in 4 or 5 days? Because I know in a week there's some other ridiculous or bizarre thing that's going to come up. That's probably going to be my next venture in the Corona series. Okay. So that was gave rise to the whole
styling. Correct. And do you think, I mean, I haven't seen much of abstract. I'm assuming it will go further abstract as you progress in your craft overall, in your storytelling. But have you experienced any abstract animations or storytelling? And do you think they are still relatable? I'm asking you this because I was just going through some like Katshiro's work of the way you have like put that small 1988 masterpiece. So any
right.
Yeah, so any insights there about going abstract and then still making the story relatable?
I mean, abstraction is something like in animation, I guess we call it experimental animation, where there is no like set narrative as such. Like there are no you wouldn't see characters, or you wouldn't see a world, or you wouldn't see the like the normal, like the usual stuff that you see in you expect in animation. So experimental animation is a huge thing over the years, and especially because of this one guy called Norman McLaren. He's a Canadian animator from the National Film Board of Canada, and that guy is like a one pioneer, just like we call Walt Disney like one of the pioneers. See, this guy is like completely opposite, and he's one of the pioneers of animation, and his basically his way of looking at animation is very, very different. So he would always say, like, I would just like to quote him. I don't know if the quote is exact, but when I heard this, I could resonate with it. Basically, he told that animation is not the art of drawings that move, but the art of movements that are drawn. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard this. Yeah.
Yes. So when you're saying this sentence, you automatically giving the most amount of importance to movement and not drawing. So the animation is just a study of movement, breaking it down into the fundamental aspects of it. What we are trying to achieve is basically getting the movement right. Whatever what we are trying to do is try to get the movement right. And I feel movement is intrinsic to, again, each individual. The way I move is not going to be the same as the way you move. That's what defines character. That's what defines your opinion, everything else. So there's like, when we get into experimental animation, there is no like world, there is no characters. You would just see, for example, you would just see a series of scratches on film, perhaps, like just set to music. But certain stuff still like resonates with you. When you watch that, you feel a certain kind of emotion. That's what becomes the narrative of the film. Then when you're watching it, there is no structural element to it, or there is no definite, you can't pinpoint that's that, or that's that, that is just series of dots and squares and or whatever. But when you're seeing it as a whole, and when you're listening to it, when you, it's just a bizarre audiovisual experience that you kind of have, and that that kind of itself becomes the narrative of the film. So again, that experimental animation becomes a very, very, like, what would I say, very abstract form of storytelling in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Quite interesting. In fact, I would like to dig my older episodes, and I think I have particularly asked these questions to Suresh Iriath, Dhiman Peras, yes. I think, that are you 100% sure that you cannot have an animation without a moment? I think I have to go down and listen to his answer again.
My mentor and faculty, Shekhar Mukherjee, he told me this, like he used to tell us this very often, that since your grandmother doesn't squash and stretch, basically squash and stretch is a animation principle where you basically, to show volume, to the change in volume, you basically squash the, basically when the ball is bouncing, there is a squash and stretch in the ball. But he had said that your grandmother won't be squashing and stretching when she's walking. So if you make an animation of her, you make sure you don't squash and stretch your grandmother. So that again gives more important, like when you like it's a funny thing, but when you listen to it properly and understand the importance of it, it's like everybody's movement is very intrinsic, and capturing that is the should be the honest goal of an animator.
Correct. So like it's a nice segue to the next question. So if you can also explain your process a bit more in detail about, you can pick up the any recent video of yours and just like, how did you pick the topic, build the story, and then how did it manifest into like a short film or a movie or an Instagram clip? Like a just quick overview of that.
Right. So I'll just talk about this Corona series then, because this is like the most recent published work.
Yes.
That's from my side. So basically this Corona series started off when I was getting like right at the beginning of the lockdown, when like suddenly the world is hit by this major virus, basically this global pandemic. And we've been, suddenly everybody is talking about this, and it became the word of every mouth. And and then suddenly there's this extreme propagation of fear that people are having. People are, there is not, as you might have heard, that there were no toilet paper rolls at one point in the US, and people were just hoarding stuff like crazy. So out of fear, basically, they didn't know what the virus can do and what it can't. Some people were saying that it travels through air, and that bit of debate is still there. So basically, I started off with that first video where there was this extreme propagation of fear, where this woman who was stuck in the lift, and that visual of that claustrophobia that you experience when you're stuck in a lift with especially with a person that you know, and you don't know if that person has COVID or anything. So you get very suspicious about that person, and then suddenly there's this time expansion of from a couple of seconds of just moving floors to like this like nightmare, almost nightmarish feeling, where you're like stuck with a person you don't know, and you think that person is coughing, and suddenly you panic like crazy and you don't know what to do. So I just wanted to build upon that, and so that's what happened in that first one, first video. Right after that came in another news where basically there was this crazy amount of racism and xenophobia that was happening that we could see for the people towards the people of the Northeast. It was crazy amount. We knew that it was always there, but especially during the time of the coronavirus, I mean, I don't know how to explain that. it was like really disheartening to see that. So, and the reason why I chose that as a topic is because I wanted to talk about it. And satire plays a very, very important role in the entire series, I guess. I mean, satire has this like almost like an intrinsic property of being like, it makes you watch the whole thing and have a good laugh about it, but you take back something, feeling almost a feeling of guiltiness, almost a feeling of guilt that you take back along with. I mean, I don't know what you do with it. I hope you do something good about it, but you take back something that hits you. That's the reason why the whole series probably became so relatable.
But sorry to interrupt. But I was just thinking about this, that animation or being animated. Right. If you look at animation, or if you generally watch animation, it can be also loosely translated as exaggerated moments.
Right.
Now, do you think that satire plus this exaggeration, so satire in the narrative and in the overall storytelling, and while visually it is way too exaggerated. So do you think that you're like sort of building a totally counter narrative, which is probably larger than what it's supposed to be, or that is the idea?
I don't know if it's very weird when we, especially during whatever I was posting on my animation films, I'm sure they're like extremely exaggerated and everything, but for how long? I mean, things completely go out of proportion in real life as well. Like when we watch the news, you turn on the news, it's almost animated what you see. Heavily exaggerated, almost like chest thumping sense of exaggeration that we see on national media. So I mean, till what extent is it the difference is made? I try to bridge the gap between realism and like exaggeration, but that gap keeps getting smaller and smaller as like live action and like not. Reality keeps catching up to it. So that's what it is. I mean, satire is a great way of it has a great unique quality of treading dangerous territory without being like overtly offensive or something, and also it kind of gives a truer picture to people about themselves. So I mean, satire is the way to go, for at least for this series. I mean, to make it much more relatable.
But do you like, I mean, since you're like just 26, I believe, how do you manage to take down the trolling? And I mean, frankly, I've like just stopped watching comments everywhere, but you must have faced it in the early series which you must have posted, right? Because there's like both sort of people. One side you have these liberals who are open with everything, they just praise, and then there are these certain bucks, if you may call it. So how are you dealing with that by posting stories?
I kind of get confused about the segregation. Like I don't know which one to fall to. Sometimes I feel that I'm a right-wing buck, and sometimes because of certain ideals I believe in, does that, so I question myself, do I believe in the believing in that, does believing in that certain good quality make me a right-wing buck, or am I a liberal because I'm like too over the top against the government or whatever? But I believe my work is like is just an, in terms of like politics and all that, I'm not growing up I wasn't at all a watcher of the news or whatever, but as and when like college happened and everything, I slowly started getting into understanding of how the country works a little bit. I don't have much idea. I'm sure there will be people to guide me and enlighten me about that. But I guess whatever I've been seeing, I've been just reacting to it through my work. Everything is a reaction to my political or social environment. So I mean, that's just my opinion. And I have every right to put across my opinion in terms of, and the way I'm channelizing it through my work, I guess that's quite important. Because that's, my work has become my medium of self-expression again. I wouldn't make a vlog. I can try, but I wouldn't make a vlog or a blog about like what I think about what everything that is going wrong in the country. But I would just do it in this way. And obviously, if I'm putting it out there on a digital platform for everyone to see, as much as they like or dislike my work, if it kind of goes against their political opinion, then they would hurl abuses and they'll have their defense mechanisms on. That's what their defense mechanisms are. I mean, it's just natural. And same goes for the people who like my political stuff. They would like it because it agrees. It kind of caters to their like validation, political inclination, basically. So if they like the work, it's because they're also in terms with what I'm trying to say. So they put it up. So this treading in like dangerous grounds of like which part of the thing you are on, and if you're on that part, then you better not step into this part is a very, very it's not possible in reality. I mean, okay. At the end of the day, you are part of a society which is living and breathing, and you are having discussions. Maybe we are very different and very similar in different aspects, right? So I mean, that segregation on that front is something that I wouldn't want to do. Although when you see through my work, you see me raising voices against the government and certain things, and you would think that I'm anti-government. But I guess I speak up for all the wrong things that are happening. I don't necessarily make an artwork based on the good things that are happening. So that is why probably people think about me like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely understand where you're coming from. And fortunately, unfortunately, even I'm swinging in between these two areas of being a bhakt or being like a liberal sort of a thing. But yeah, I mean, it's a great way that you put it, of you just finding animation to be your form of expression and nothing beyond
I think the idea is to create through all these politically charged work or otherwise, the idea is to create dialogue. I mean, dialogue is important.
Yeah. And even if there is some sort of a counter narrative against something, I think that's what democracy is about. And that creates, as long as you take it in the right spirit and exactly. And you know, but yeah, it's very difficult where to cross the line. I mean, with experience, people
you only realize once you cross it.
Correct. Yeah, beautiful. I think this is a good note to end because I just wanted to understand these bits for now. And I definitely will put the other animators' interviews, whichever I've taken, for more reference. But all the best, dude. Like, you're doing some amazing work. It was real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
And all the best for your ongoing and upcoming gigs.
Right, absolutely. Thank you, Kedar. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's it from today's Gyan session. Catch us on iTunes, Saavn, Stitcher, or any podcasting app you use. Do rate us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Stay tuned for more Gyan on audiogyan.com. Till then, bye.